Good evening. Welcome to, gosh, was it 10th of May 2024? Welcome to your Friday Night Live. We are here to Chitty Chat. Third show of the day, baby. Working like a turkin. I did a really wild interview with a good friend, Dr. Duke Pastor from FPEUSA.org, Freedom Project Academy. Duke Pastor and I have been doing reviews of world literature, art, and religion since 2015, 2016, something like that. You should go to FDRpodcasts.com, FDRpodcast.com. Do a search. The Pastor stuff is fantastic. We really click in a beautiful way when it comes to discussing Latin literature anyway. So we did one of my books. We did my book, The Present, and he grilled me. He grilled me, and it was great. It was a great conversation. Challenging conversation for me, because it's like, so where does this leave you and God that you write such a pro-Christian book? Very fair question. If I'd thought about it ahead of time, I wouldn't have been surprised. Yet still I was. It's just a delightful, confusing part of my life that I bring to bear on the planet on a regular basis. But it really was fascinating to talk to a professor of literature about the meaning and structure and power and depth of one of my own novels. That was quite something. And I really appreciate his time, as always. So that will go out to donors on the weekend, and we'll put it out at some point to the regular listeners, but it was fantastic. Then I did a show, a call-in show, 2.5 hours with a guy whose father was a mama's boy, and that got him into significant conflict with his wife. And now he's almost 30, and aside from one night stand, he has virtually no relationships with women. And it was very interesting. I was working hard, and then the answer came at the end, near the end of the conversation, the true answer came as to what was going on. It was still really good all the way through, but boy, that bit towards the end. So that will again go out at some point. We have some shows backlogged. And now tonight, I talk to you all. Good morning from Adelaide, Australia. Australia. All right. What do we got here? Good evening. Yes. The year is flying by fast. Isn't it wild? Already May. Yes, indeed. It is just wild how quickly it's going. And, oh yes, that's right. And I did The Truth About Free Speech, which was 6 minutes of concentrated rebuttals on the two most common falsehoods about why we can't have the free speech. We just can't have the free speech, you see, because did you know that free speech, that speech could incite violence? So I did a rebuttal to that one. And then I did medical misinformation. Surely that should be banned. Surely that should be banned. Who the heck is Andrew Wilson? Older brother of Luke and Owen Wilson. He's appeared in Whippet, Idiocracy, and Bottle Rocket. Well, I suppose that's nice to know. If somebody's asking me, and thank you for the tip, Billy, do you think that Andrew Wilson from The Crucible will be deleted from YouTube at some point? Thank you for the philosophy. So here's when you know people are really corrupt. Here's what you know, and I'm not talking about Andrew Wilson. It's our good friends over there in YouTube land. Our good friends over there in YouTube land. How do we know that they are fairly hopelessly corrupt? How could we possibly know these things? Well, because they banned people for things that turned out to have been true, or at least valid, right? I mean, they banned people for things that turned out to have been true, and we don't have to get into the details. I'm sure everyone is fully aware of what I'm talking about. So they banned people for things that turned out to be true, and yet there's no retraction, no apologies, no reinstatement. So they don't care about the truth. Right? In general, I'm not talking about everyone at YouTube, but they don't care about the truth. Because if you ban people for what you think is a falsehood, and it turns out that falsehood is true, then if you care about the truth, you would reinstate them. And you would say, well, what you said, which we thought was false, is true, so we're going to have to reinstate you with a big apology. But no, it doesn't matter. They don't care. It's not about truth. It's all about power. Like the free speech argument's not about truth. It's all about power. All right. He, Andrew Wilson, is a paleo-Christian. Paleo-Christ-con? Paleo-Christ-con. That may mean more to you than to me. He goes on the Whatever podcast from time to time. Oh, is that the smoker guy? Thank you, Beep Bop. Is that just a smoking guy? Is that right? He's a pretty good debater. And the one thing that I saw of him that was memorable, but he's pretty impatient. So I saw him on the Whatever clips. The Whatever clips are interesting. And he had one where the women are like, it's not what you're saying, it's how you're saying it. And he gets really impatient at this tone police. Oh, this is what happens when you invite women into your space. You just get tone policed and they don't care about the facts. They only care about the feelings and blah, 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 right? So you understand, like, do you understand why do women say, and not all women do, of course, right? None of the women in my life. So why do women tone police? Why do they say, it's not what you say, it's how you're saying it? Why do some women, and men do it too, but in general, it's a little bit more of a female thing. Why do women say, it's not what you say, it's how you say it? What would be their motive? And I can check over here on Rumble as well, if you'd like to, but it's an interesting question. Why do women say, oh, it's not what you say, it's how you're saying it? I know these delays are killer. You gotta be around for the voice calls because they're more immediate. Why would they say that? Why? So they can create the meaning instead of you? I don't think so. Meaning can't be created usually that way. Like, you can't just create meanings for every word, right? Why do women say, it's not what you're saying, it's how you're saying it? So I would love to see you on Andrew's show. I admire you both. The conversation between you two would break the internet. Excellent. Because they want people to get along. Being non-threatening is a survival benefit women have evolved. Women are non-threatening. Women are non-threatening? What? Women are non-threatening? Women have abortions, beat children a lot, more than men, and threaten men, nag men. Women are non-threatening? What? No, so the reason why women say, it's not what you're saying, it's how you're saying it, is so they don't have to deal with facts. So they get you to self-criticize, they get you to then work on tone, and they become the gatekeepers of information. So the way that you become a good gatekeeper of information is you actually have facts, reason, evidence, and debate tactics on your side, right? Then you become the gatekeeper of what gets across. So women say, it's not what you're saying, it's how you're saying it, so that you will self-criticize and you will withdraw trying to get information across, and you start self-criticizing yourself and being rude or whatever it is. It's just a way of censoring you so that whatever it is that you're saying won't get across. The women have this magic wand called tone, which they get to use to wave away, some women, right? They get to wave away uncomfortable facts with a magic wand called tone. It's amazing. Your facts are troubling me. I'm troubled, therefore it's your fault, right? Your arguments are making me uncomfortable, therefore I'm going to reject your arguments based upon your upon my discomfort. And it's your fault that I'm uncomfortable. And it's really sad. It's really sad. The amount of great information that's kept away from women because of this tone policing stuff is really, really tragic. All right. We have a James is saying we have a queue of about 3 to 4 weeks for call-ins and Q&As after early release to support us. Yeah. And remember, if you're a donor, call in at freedomain.com. If you're a donor, call in at freedomain.com. You go nice and fast. Andrew's raising a bunch of kids that aren't his, but he pretends to be against that. His wife has like 3 baby daddies, I think. Okay, don't spread stuff if you don't know. Don't type stuff if you don't know. That's not good. Maybe you're right, but don't, that's gossip, right? It's not gossip if it's factual and relevant, but if you're like, I don't know, I think he has his wife has three babies. Like, if you don't know, you know, come on, have some discipline. You don't want people spreading stuff about you that's unverified. I don't want them doing it about me. So, all right. Lee says, hey, Steph, did you ever have any dream memories come through from child abuse or having flashbacks or being scared of things you shouldn't be? I keep having memories, dreams, and flashbacks of terrible things happening to me, but I don't know if they happened to me. Well, are you in a situation where you're safe now? Are you in a situation of safety now? Right? If you're not in a situation of safety now, it's not PTSD, in my view. It's not PTSD in my view for most people. It is, I'm still in danger, right? Steph, have you seen the horrible case of the man forcing the kid on the treadmill? I don't. I mean, I see this stuff in passing and I can't. I can, but I choose not to. I just don't want to see that stuff. I don't want to see that stuff. So you are in a safe situation now. I don't have, I mean, it's funny. I mean, I will occasionally have nightmares like once or twice a year. I used to, though not so much anymore, have these. Actually, yeah, I was helping out a friend with a musical number and I had dreams about being unprepared, right? And that's usually just like the same thing I had with the university. Like I've taken some course and, you know, I haven't really been going to the course, but I haven't canceled it. I'm not sure exactly where it is. Time's going by. And it's going to be bad all around, right? I've left something unattended. I have been inactive, right? So I would get those kind of dreams, although I haven't had those in years. But I can't remember the last dream I've had from childhood, but then I'm in a great, wonderful place now. I'm therefore, a fear is there to get you to safety. And if you're still having fear, it's because you don't feel safe, I think, in some way. So call in at freedomain.com for that. Somebody says, any advice on getting over a deep fear of my parents' reaction to me moving out? I'm 23 and have a viewing of a room I'd like to start renting soon, but I have a deep fear of the response this decision will invoke from my parents. I actually called into your show last year in July. We spoke about it. Now I'm actually doing the thing, but just getting over this last couple of hurdles. Well, what did I say last year? If my advice was good last year, then do that. If my advice was bad last year, then tell me what it was so that I don't give the same advice again. Right? Andrew has brought you up in a show. He truly wants to have you on. Please consider it, Steph. He's a good man. I'm not that keen on doing other people's shows. All right. You're pretty defooed, but just recently. Okay, how long ago? When did it happen? Did you expect the Tate Brothers' popularity back when you interviewed Tristan on his cam show business? I mean, Andrew Tate has a lot of charisma. He's incredibly articulate, and he tells a lot of important, powerful truths, and it's... there's some particularly unsavory stuff too, right? So, I mean, I've always wanted to be someone like, okay, so he, you know, I like to, Steph's got some useful stuff to say and there's nothing you have to hold your nose about. Like, that's kind of my my thing, right? So I've always wanted to be the guy where you don't have to be like, yeah, but, you know, oof, okay, well, if I ignore this, 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 and this, then there's some useful stuff. You know, like, I mean, I'm ridiculously wholesome, right? I mean, happily married and a good dad and you know, I don't get into any weird stuff and trouble and, like, I don't know. So, I mean, now the Tate brothers are now being sued by four women. Well, I don't know if it's both of them, but I think it's definitely Andrew Tate. And it was not the most noble entrance into his wealth, as you can imagine, right? So. All right. Let's see, what do we have here? Well, while I'm waiting, I've gotten some feedback on why I didn't get feedback on my Peaceful Parenting book. Okay, so I'll get to that in a second. Let's see here. What do you call it when you have an argument with a woman and she says you just don't like women, as if she represents all women in the world? So I remember having a debate with someone, a woman years ago, and she pulled that on me and she said, well, you just don't like women. And I said, have you checked? Have you checked with the women? Do you have affidavits? Do you have sign-offs? Have you checked? Well, no. Well, then you're just pretending that there's a bunch of you when there is not. That's actually called a mental health disorder, right? That's multiple personality disorder. I am every woman. It's all in me, right? I mean, that's a mental health disorder if you think there's a lot of people in there when there's not, right? So, yeah, have you checked? So, today's speech, video, Marxism equals groups takes power till people change, millions dead. Yet your novel, The Future, prologue, group builds robots who take power till people change, equals utopia. We did take power, right? So you're trolling. You're trolling, right? I mean, I don't really think anybody could be that blind to the message. Oh, dear, oh, dear. So group takes power till people change, equals millions dead. Yes. That's exactly what Marxism is. They're just taking this mysterious thing called power till people change. No, Marxism is a violent revolution where they point guns at all class enemies and slaughter them indiscriminately. And then after they point guns at all class enemies, they point guns at everyone who doesn't immediately conform. And then eventually they point it at people who do conform, and then they run out of bodies and an economy and it collapses. So apparently, the mass slaughterhouse called Marxism is exactly the same as robots who protect children from being raped, beaten, and assaulted. Apparently, protecting children is the same as genociding the kulaks. Apparently, self-defense, or the defense of children from assault and rape and beatings, to defend children from that in any automatic fashion is exactly the same as grabbing control of a government machinery, instituting a reign of terror, and killing 100 million people plus in gulags. It's exactly the same. Protecting children from being assaulted and raped is exactly the same as murdering 100 million people. Oh my God. I mean, if the subject matter wasn't so dark, I could laugh for a week. I don't even know what to say. Your advice last year was very sensible. I just need to embrace courage and accept the inevitable fear during this process and still proceed. Why is the fear inevitable? Why is the fear inevitable? You defooed like a month ago. Okay, and are you still being contacted? Like you say, you're in safety, but are you? I mean, are you still being contacted? Is there still a threat? Is there, right? Are they trying to get people against you? I mean, who knows, right? Somebody says, lots of dreams where I need to be somewhere, but I have no idea how to get there from where I ever was. From wherever I was. Or classic driving a vehicle, but the brakes won't stop the car. I can steer, barely, but in constant danger. I can interpret that easy enough. General anxiety. Lack of direction in my waking life. Yeah, it's probably more than that. All right. The Royal We. Yeah, yeah. I am every woman. Are you a member of a royal family entitled to speak for the many? Yeah, yeah. All women? How many women are inside you? How are you the shark from Jaws? Like, how many women are in there? How many people are in there? Oh my gosh. I mean, it's just sad sophistry, right? But I'm sure the predators of children would strenuously object to the idea of the protection of children. Right. Right, right. Right. I mean, it's, you know, here's the thing. So if you have a criticism, I mean, I've been doing philosophy now for 42 years, right? I got into it in my mid-teens. I've been doing philosophy for 42 years. I have a graduate degree. I've spoken with experts. I've debated endless times, a lot of them in public. I've written books. I know my stuff, right? I know my stuff. I know my stuff. So if you want to tell me that I'm wrong, hey, you know, go to it. It absolutely could be the case. I mean, it could be the case, right? So if you want to tell me that I'm wrong, work for it. For God's sakes, work for it. What level of single mom infused vanity and vaingloriousness do you have to just sit there and say, well, I'm just going to type some shit and Steph's wrong. Yeah, your robots that protect children from being assaulted is just the same as the mass slaughterhouse of a communist totalitarian state. Steph, you haven't noticed this blindingly obvious thing. That I, who have approximately 5.5 minutes in philosophy, have completely seen this blindingly obvious thing that you've somehow missed for 42 years. Oh, how much vanity does it take? How much vanity does it take to not have respect for 42 years of experience? I mean, I calculated it many, many years ago that I had like 40,000 hours in philosophy. It's probably 60, 70, 80,000 hours now, right? Right. And I've gone through the ringer, right? I mean, I've been criticized, I've been attacked, I've been undermined, I've been lied about, there's been sophistry, like I've been through the ringer. Now, does that mean that I'm right about everything? No. I mean, logically, omniscience is impossible and perfection is impossible. I could be wrong. I could be wrong. But somebody with as much expertise as I have, you should respect the expertise. You should. You should respect the expertise because to not respect the expertise is to self-sabotage, right? To not respect the expertise is to engage in a terrible form of self-sabotage. The reason being that to achieve excellence is really, really hard work. It's really, really, really hard work to become excellent at something, and I'm excellent at philosophy. I am. I'm excellent at philosophy. And I've got 60, 70, 80,000 hours into it. It takes 10,000 hours to become a master, and I've got 7 or 8 times that. So if you don't respect my experience, which doesn't mean that I'm right, obviously, but if you don't respect my experience, you will see no value in gathering your own. Do you understand? If you don't respect my experience and my expertise, you will see no value in gathering it yourself. In other words, if you can just wander out of the toilet, jam your finger up your nose, and then just say something profoundly true that corrects me on the essences of philosophy that I've studied for 42 years, you can just wander in and drop truth bombs that the entire community and me have completely missed for close to 20 years. Then you will absolutely see no value in becoming an expert in anything. This is what I mean when I say it is self-sabotage. It is self-sabotage. Because if you assume that you can be absolutely fantastic without doing any work at all, then you will have no respect for people who've done the actual work. And therefore, you won't apply yourself, and therefore you won't succeed. Now, what does it mean to respect my expertise? What does it mean to respect my expertise? Does that mean I can't be wrong? Well, of course it doesn't mean I can't be wrong. Of course it doesn't mean that. What does it mean to respect my expertise? It means that assuming that I'm wrong about obvious things is disrespectful. You're welcome to watch my 8-part review of The Future on YouTube Rumble BitChute if you want the long-form critique. No, but you're saying that the robots that defend children in my science fiction novel are exactly the same as Marxists who slaughter people. In other words, you're saying self-defense is the same as the initiation of the use of force at a mass liquidation, genocidal, institutional level. So why on earth would, like, if you make that association, if you think that defending children is the same as slaughtering 100 million people, that self-defense, which is not the initiation of force, is equivalent to the institutional initiation of force, then why would I listen to anything you have to say? I mean, if you can't see the difference between that, why would I listen to anything you have to say? Like, you had a chance to introduce yourself, and you say that by advocating the protection of children, I'm promoting genocidal dictatorships. Like, do you have any idea how offensive that is? I mean, not that I particularly care, because, well, I don't know you, but do you have any idea how offensive that is? My entire public career, what I have burned my reputation to the ground for is the protection of children and a rejection of the initiation of force. And you come to me and you say, Steph, despite the fact that you've spent over 40 years promoting the protection of children and promoting the non-aggression principle, you're actually promoting genocidal Marxism. In other words, I've been completely wrong. Everyone around me who I've ever talked to is completely wrong. This entire community is completely wrong. But you're right. You're just so fucking right. You don't have to make an argument. You just have to fling insults, and you're a genius. See, we all have this challenge, right? We all have this challenge. Now, do we want to be great, or do we just want to pretend other people suck? Right? Do we want to become great, or do we just want to pretend that other people suck? Do we want to do the hard work of developing our own original thoughts and ideas and arguments, or do we just want to mouth off to more competent people and pretend that they're stupid? And I'm saying that in both cases, the answer to implementing one's values on the population is exercising power over them. No, I'm sorry. You're terrible at this, and you don't have a clue. You're so bad at this. You're like the William Hung of philosophy here. Like, you're so bad at this, and you don't even know. The purpose of self-defense is to prevent people from exercising power over you. The purpose of self-defense is to prevent people from exercising power over you. So if some guy goes to rape a woman and she uses a taser on him, that is to prevent her from exercising power over him. Self-defense is the prevention of the exercise of power over others. Totalitarian dictatorships are the brutal initiation of force to exercise power over others. So if you can't have any clue of the conception of the difference between preventing someone from exercising power over you to actually exercising power over other people, the individual versus the institution, I can't help you. I can't help you. If you think, well, I mean, you're taking the antidote to a poison. That's poisoning you others. Like you got poisoned by someone. Now you're taking the antidote to that poison. Well, you're just poisoning people. You're poisoning everyone. Well, I mean, how can you even say it? What can you say to people like that? But no, you should come and watch my 8-part review. No, I don't think I will. Oh my gosh. And listen, I like that you're interested in philosophy. I really do. I think it's wonderful that you're interested in philosophy, but you're terrible at it. That doesn't mean you can't become good at it, but you're terrible at it. And maybe you're smarter than the people around you, and you're more verbal than the people around you, so maybe they think you're all that and a slice of toast. But you're terrible at it. And I say that not because I want to humiliate you, although you have in fact tried to humiliate me by saying I'm promoting a genocidal dictatorship in my novel about a peaceful future. So I'm not saying this to humiliate you, despite the fact that I could reasonably do so. I'm saying this to inspire you. Because you haven't studied this stuff, you haven't reasoned anything out from first principles. So you're like, well, I want to be a great pianist, you say, playing with your elbows and your ass and one of your nuts. I want to be a great pianist. It's like, you know, maybe you could do some scales. And if you haven't done scales and you suck at piano, then you have the option to do scales and become better at piano. So you just need to reason things from first principles and understand what the fuck you're talking about before you go around lecturing people wildly incorrectly who have over 40 years of experience. Have some humility. Have some humility. I mean, I was a student of Aristotle and objectivism for like 20 years before I really began thinking for myself, because you got to study a lot before you start coming up with your own stuff, right? So it's a long, hard road to become good at philosophy. Hopefully, I've made it a little easier for people by breaking down some barriers, providing some principles, and making some, you know, breaking through the ice and making a path. So I'm happy when, obviously thrilled and happy when people want to extend, like the philosophy, the story of modern philosophy infinitely does not start and end with me. But if you want to start correcting people, especially masters in the field, maybe learn some stuff. Just learn some stuff. Just spend some time actually learning some shit. Learn how to identify principles, learn how to make arguments, learn how to differentiate between attack and defense, you know. I paid my dues before I went public. I paid my dues from 15 to 40 before I went public, really. And that was a long time. That was a long time to be apprenticed. And don't spout absolutely stupid, insulting shit at a moral philosopher and think you've done anything other than embarrass yourself in the eyes of the wise. Let's do one more. That was your takeaway from my question, eh? You're accusing me of promoting genocide? Yeah, you're saying that my novel promotes the equivalent of communism. Oh, well, the 8 videos are there. The hilarious thing is how you actually asked, why don't I get criticism? I'd love to get criticism. You're not providing criticism. It's just stupid equivalencies between the protection of children and genocidal Marxists. Well, it's just like that. It's not an argument. This is not intelligent criticism. This is just retarded monkey poo throwing. Turd flinging monkey. Is that guy still around? I haven't thought of him in years. But yeah, I mean, you're just smearing feces and saying, why don't you review my art? Like, sorry, like you have to, You know, I'd love to get some criticism. I would love to get some criticism. That would be excellent. Love to get some criticism. I don't know what the hell this is, but it sure ain't criticism. I'll tell you that for sure. That is not what it is. I don't know what that is. All right. So I was going to say that I got a bunch of feedback from people, and I won't get into the individual emails, but I did get a bunch of feedback from people as to why they weren't giving me feedback on my Peaceful Parenting book. And the general answer seems to be, does anybody want to guess? What was the general answer about why people weren't giving me feedback on my Peaceful Parenting book? Why do you think that was the case? And I did somewhat suspect this, but I didn't want to guess it. Right? I know that sounds easy to say after the fact. I did have an idea about this, but I did want some confirmation. What do you think it was? For the most part. I mean, almost for the most part, right? Why, oh, why, oh, why? They've been pushing it back and haven't listened to or read it yet. No. I mean, no, it wasn't that they haven't read it. I got very little feedback on that. It was the people who had read it. Although that's helpful feedback to get as well. They thought you didn't need it? Nope. No. While I wait for this, I'm wondering, maybe I can dig one up. Maybe I can. I have this keyboard. I got to replace it, man. You ever have those keyboards? Like, I'm a pretty fast typist. I have this keyboard that it came with the computer, and I'm just always mistyping on it. Other keyboards are fine, but it's just something about this one. Just something about this one. Oh, and one guy was saying that, he said, he gave me some feedback, and he said, first I would like to start by saying that I appreciate all that you do, especially your call-in shows, and I'm very grateful for all the philosophy that you've contributed to the world. One of the ways your philosophy has impacted me is that you have convinced me that I want to raise my children peacefully. And to that regard, listening to your book on peaceful parenting is something I very much look forward to. I've tried to listen to what you have recorded, but honestly, wasn't able to get much further than the introduction and part of the first chapter. From just that much, I can say that it is a difficult book and that it definitely requires a lot of attention to engage with the ideas. I'm certain that part of the reason why I stopped listening to it has to do with the internal conflicts that the book addresses. I was spanked as a child. But I also found it hard to listen for a while and then come back to it because of the way the audio files are made available, right? So there's a hint there, right? I'm getting a lot of emails that people are just finding the book really upsetting. Like, it's really, really, really upsetting. It's like scolding for people. Anyway, so this guy gives me this hint, and then he says, I do not like how a lot of the premium content is accessible through the internet links that are posted to locals, because the internet browser that opens to play the file only saves my progress if I haven't been away from the audio file for too long. So the books are all available in feeds, right? So this is just something I would suggest, you know, for your own sanity, right? Okay, RSS feed, audiobook, save progress, right? Just do RSS feed. They're all available as an RSS feed, right? Save progress. Audio bookshelf, you can download the files and it will store where you are. Every local RSS will store where you are and all of that. So I just don't understand why people wouldn't look at that up and say, how do I store progress in an audiobook? Do you think that nobody's ever thought, hey, you know, it'd be interesting if you have a 23-hour audiobook, it would be really kind of helpful if it saved progress somewhere. I mean, Audible was doing this one back when I had a Rio 500. Bizarre to me. Like, why wouldn't you just look up? How do you save? Like, well, the problem, it's Steph's. It's Steph's the problem. What? I mean, it's just bizarre to me. I don't understand why people do this kind of stuff. I really want to save progress on my audiobook. It's 2014. 2024. Nobody could possibly have figured this out. So anyway, but the real truth is that it's just sort of painful. It's painful for that, right? It's painful for that. So let's see, what else did someone say? I found the warning at the beginning of Peaceful Parenting to be prophetic. My own childhood was a disaster, adverse childhood experience score of 5, and I have struggled to adequately implement peaceful parenting with my own children, particularly my oldest son, who is now 15. Please understand, I have been a listener since about 2012, so I have absolutely zero excuses regarding my own parenting. I did about a dozen therapy sessions in 2015, which helped a fair bit. But after she recommended I divorce my wife, I stopped going and did not look for a replacement. I continued to harbor resentment towards my son, occasionally lashing out at him in fits of rage. The internal torment from knowing that I am acting contrary to what I know to be right and harming my child was awful. I felt like I had no control over it until I read your novel, The Future. Seeing the angels as a metaphor for integrity was like a jolt to knock me out of my deterministic thinking. Still, I couldn't quite get there. But your book, Peaceful Parenting, changed everything for me. The part about forgiveness and restitution shocked me to my core like nothing I've ever felt. I wept for days. Every night when I laid in bed driving to and from work, and any other time that I was alone, I couldn't control it. This lasted for a couple of weeks. I could only digest about an hour of your book once every few days. But through this process, I resolved to change everything. I shackled the demon in my mind with chains of integrity, gave a heart-wrenching apology to my boy, spoke with my own father, and started to make a plan for the rest of my parenting career. I now spend every spare minute outside of work and sleep focused on being the best father I can be. I believe your Peaceful Parenting book has the power to change the world if only enough angels can be released in time. So that's very powerful. And I've been getting quite a bit of that. Quite a bit of that. And I did ask him if I could read that bit of the email, and he said yes. So I've been getting a lot of just how painful it is. It's very painful for people. Because a lot of, you know, if you had a bad childhood, it's tough because your inner parents are railing against it. If you're a parent yourself and you've made mistakes, as we all have, then it's very tough for that as well. So a critique, as in chapter X, paragraph Y, you state so-and-so, but an expert in the field published research suggesting the opposite. How do you come to your conclusions? Yeah, that's a good question. That's a good question. That's a good question. Your novels, The Present and The Future, are the best non-scripture books I've read or heard in I don't know how long. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. It's very kind. It's funny, right? So people say, like, they just provide insulting, stupid stuff, right? And I honestly don't care about the insults, right? But it's stupid stuff, and it is insulting. And then when I reject it out of hand, they say, well, you just don't take impulse. Like I have to take everybody's stupid shit. Like, I have to be wide open. I have to have no filters, no boundaries, no standards. Anybody can say any kind of stupid shit to me, and I'm just absolutely obligated to, you know, I have free will, right? And I have moral standards. So I don't have to respond to you at all. And then people are just, they're trying to bully me. Why you don't get any feedback, and you don't take feedback, and you don't get criticism. It's like, hey, I absolutely do. I absolutely do. But you have to know what the hell you're talking about, right? Yeah, you're right about this, right? He says, imagine if your own audience is having a difficult time, think about someone who has no knowledge of you or peaceful parenting, right? Right. Right. Thank you for the tip, C2. I appreciate that. It's very, very kind and very gratefully and humbly appreciated. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And remember, if you, because the The Mobi and the EPUB books are out, so you can read them on Kindle. You can read them on, Kobo? Which is an anagram of book, by the way. But Kobo, you can read it there. You can read it on your computer. You can read it and anywhere which reads these formats, and they're the two most common formats. And it, believe it or not, it will. You can make notes, and it will actually store your progress. Isn't that incredible? It will actually store your progress. So if you donate at freedomain.com/donate, you'll get a copy. And if you donate it over this show, just email me, and I'll. You can email me operations@freedomain.com, and I'll send you the book, because, you know, I really appreciate your support here as well. Yeah, you suck! Doesn't count it, right? The Present, your novel The Present, was awesome. Stoked to read the future, and almost. It would be a great movie, in my opinion, as long as they didn't butcher it. I actually thought Angel Studios would be interesting for them to have a look at the novel The Present. I was listening to more of it, and it's like, wow. You know, I mean, Dr. Pesta was saying, so you and God, what's the story? Like, where are you at right now? Because, you know, this book is very powerful and very pro-Christian. Where are you at? Totally fair question.
Yeah. Limbo.
Great question. Not always the most comfortable question, but that's not the point now, is it? That's not the point. That was a great convo, though. Just a great cover. All right. Let's get back to your questions and comments. People be typing, but there's a delay. Yeah. I mean, honestly, your quote criticism needs to rise somewhat above the level of needs more cowbell. Recommended your novel, The Present, to a young feminist colleague. It sure did upset her in some parts, but she still read the whole thing for the good story, and it sparked some interesting convos. Yeah. I shared it on Twitter. I had a very small following of 200. I was surprised that 15 people clicked on the link. So you're well known. Trying to do my part to share peaceful parenting. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. All right. Let me just get to my other thing that I had. Oh, did I? Oh, yeah. Have you heard of the double income, no kids, right? Dinks! Son of a dink. Was it Peter Dinklage when there was a Game of Thrones calendar, and they put his picture on February? He's like, you put me on the shortest month. Oh, this means war. He's a good actor, by the way, that guy. Holy crap. All right. So, Dink, Dual Income, No Kids, was coined to capture the unabashed materialism of the 1980s. This is from AOL. I didn't even know there was still a thing. Aioli. All right. 4 decades later, the term has made a comeback, with millennials embracing it on social media to flaunt their free time, lavish spending habits, and other perks of choosing to be child-free. It has taken off far beyond the United States, including in one country where it would have been hard to imagine just a decade ago, China. China infamously once limited couples to one child each to control population growth. That led to a shortage of young people. And in 2016, the government upped the limit to 2 children. In 2021, it became 3. Now, this hasn't changed, right? And even Hungary, which is like, if you have 4 kids, you never have to pay income tax again for the rest of your life, still can't get the birth rate up. Amid deep economic uncertainty, a growing number of Chinese are opting for another number, 0. Many proudly refer to themselves as Dinks, using the acronym in English, or Dinke, the phonetic translation in Mandarin. Oh, now I want an orange. Zhukai Kiai, 29, see, I don't actually speak Mandarin, said being Dinks gives her and her 36-year-old boyfriend a greater sense of control over their lives. It reduces some of the anxieties about age, she said. I don't know what that means. She works in advertising in Shanghai, where her boyfriend is a project manager for a construction company. I used to talk about having a beautiful baby, she said. Now she calls herself a drifting leaf and gets so bored with people talking about children on social media that she follows only people without them. This is wild. A recent study from Luoyang Institute of Science and Science and Technology estimated that dinks accounted for about 38% of Chinese households in 2020. 38%! Oh my gosh. 38%, right? That is wild. Isn't that wild? 38%. That is something else. 12 men broke loose in 73 from Mill Haven Maximum Security. There's a great song by The Tragically Hip, who is a band that has great songs and absolutely crap songs. Music at Work, I give you Music at Work versus 38 years old, or Long Time Running, or Locked in the Trunk of a Car, or. So, tipping instead of ordering dessert. Cheers, thank you, I appreciate that. That's very kind. Very kind, and I hope wise. I'm still on my no additional sugar thing, and it's going okay. I still have to slap my hand away from the occasional treat, but for the most part, it's going just fine. Just fine. All right, so 38% as well. So and only in 2020, it was only 28%. So not that all Chinese adhere to a strict definition of the acronym. Some include anybody without children, while others don't count people who still have a chance to change their minds, women of childbearing age or men without vasectomies. It's also unclear how many dinks there are in the United States. Some 44% of couples aged 18 to 49 surveyed by Pew Research in 2021 said it was unlikely they would have children, up from 37% in 2018. So honestly, close to half of people say they're not going to have children. Y'all suck. Well, literally, you suck instead of impregnating. And, you know, my sympathy to couples who have trouble conceiving and trouble having children. I don't mean to include that at all. But you absolute craptastic selfish bastards. Well, I can't afford a PS5 if I have children. Okay, don't have kids. You don't have kids, shouldn't get a pension. Shouldn't get a pension because you're going to rely on my kids to pay your pension. Don't have kids, don't have pension. And you shouldn't need a pension because you saved all that money. By not having children, you shouldn't need a pension. God almighty. You also can't be pro-mass immigration if you don't have kids. He said it was just a high-class phenomenon, says Yuing Dong, professor of sociology at the Chinese University of Hong Kong who studies family life. People are delaying marriage, blah, blah, blah. Sure, yeah, 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 yeah. In 2023, India surpassed China as the world's most populous nation. Birth rate fell 5.6 to a record low of 6.39 births per 1,000 people, little more than half the U.S. rate, which has also declined in recent years. But not if you're around Christians. Chinese government is trying to motivate people to have kids, resorting to subsidies and even matchmaking services. In March, Chinese officials announced plans to provide more support for child rearing and, quote, work towards a birth-friendly society, including improving parental leave policies and childcare options. Yes, you should have children so that you can hand them over to a government daycare. Yes, that's really going to motivate people. Last month, Chinese Twitter-like platform Weibo promoted an article about dink couples in China who regretted not having kids because it led to loneliness, marital strife, or inheritance issues. Being a dink is a gamble on the future, said the post. More than 8 million views. It's a bet on whether you can stick to your original intention or whether partners can trust each other, and more importantly, on the complex changes of human nature. Anyway, it's absolutely just, it's beyond terrible. It's beyond terrible I view people who don't want kids as completely weird and bizarre. I'm just telling you, it could be my own personal prejudice. I, when I was younger, I knew this married couple a little older than me. They didn't have kids. They actually had, it's kind of funny, they had a little doll, like a life-size doll of a kid about five, pretending to play hide-and-go-seek in a corner. Almost used to scare me when I'd forget. It'd like me jump, I'd go to the bathroom. They lived in a split level. I'd go to the bathroom, and this kid, you know, looked like he was playing hide-and-go-seek in the corner. Ah! But it's just, you're weird. You're weird. Like, I'm sorry, for me, like, you're just weird. Why wouldn't you want to have that kind of life? Why wouldn't you want to bring life? If you like life, make life. Don't just consume it. You didn't have 3-4 billion years of evolution just for you to fritter away on masturbation and Netflix. God, that's pathetic. Pathetic. Just awful. Lee says, two guys I know who are in their late 20s are getting vasectomies, tried to talk them out of it, but they scoffed at me. Well, I guess that's reversible. Oh, I inspired you to go zero and added sugars. How is it for you? How is it for you? Yeah, it's just appalling. Well, if you had a horrible childhood, it starts to make sense. What are you talking about? Do you not think that people throughout human history had horrible childhoods? Yet here we are. Do you like being alive? That means somebody with a shitty childhood decided to become a parent. Do it! God! Find someone. Love them. Get married. Have some children. Oh, but I had a bad childhood. Oh, yeah, because, you know, childhood and the fucking Black Death was it was a blast. How about famines, plagues, invasions, icing, and the Ice Age? Human beings, we were down to 10,000 people. We were down to 10,000 people. You were surrounded by giant walls of ice in every direction, like being at the heart scan of a feminist convention. And what? They fucked and had babies. Women got pregnant during the Blitz. You know, Gulag Archipelago, right? Solzhenitsyn's famous work on the gulags. Men and women would have sex through barbed wire while in gulags. And the women would raise the children. Men and women would fuck through barbed wire, have children, and the women would raise them. What the fuck? And there are people out there who are like, well, I'm a little uneasy about this, and it's hard to find someone like barbed wire, people. Barbed wire. It's like the worst glory hole in human history. And yet. You know, I mean, there's a war, right? You know, there's a war, right? The independent thinkers, right? There's a war to get us to not breed, to fill us full of fear, anxiety, self-hatred, self-loathing, and no sense of history, no sense of culture, no sense of inheritance, no sense of virtue. A medieval man would go home to his wife, who'd never brushed her teeth and who hadn't bathed for a year. And he'd bang her like a T-Rex gong. I don't think we have it so bad. And I'll tell you this. If he'd have known that you all were going to fade out on bullshit hedonism, not you all, but people out there, right? If your ancestors had known that the precious gift of life that they handed up the daisy chain from the fucking skinks onwards, dodging the feet of dinosaurs, evolving out of the ocean, surviving every predator, having kids, losing kids, raising kids, fucking dying, screwing, hunted, eaten. All of our ancestors, like, just think, thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and millions of generations passing this torch, passing this glowing candle through the most incredible storms known to man to bring it to you. and you get this precious gift that your ancestors suffered and bled and died for, and you're like, I'm going to Bali. I'd rather do PowerPoints. Oh my God. My God. I don't know that there's enough of an intergenerational or universal curse to put on people who don't even try and are just selfishly consume everything. Like a plague of locusts, but at least a plague of locusts leaves more fucking locusts behind. Consume, consume, consume. Eat, eat, eat. Swallow, swallow, swallow. You're only here because of the suffering of your ancestors and the survival of your ancestors and the work of your ancestors. Somebody says, I had a friend always wanted children, but married a woman who refused the idea. He adopted that view, was out riding with him. Years later, we saw a family with kids, and he suddenly said, that could have been me. Chilling. I mean, you guys listen to me. Do shows with my daughter. Woke up this morning. We went out for a lovely brunch. Just her and I chatted about everything that's going on, everything she's thinking. It's such a delight, I can't even tell you. It's such a pleasure. Especially, you know, from birth onwards, you know? From birth onwards, to see this, it's like watching a giant city rise from a glass flat ocean. A couple of bubbles, and then the city just starts to arise. This personality starts to arrive. These thoughts start to arise. This teenage cynicism starts to arise. It's incredible. I've never seen anything like it. To see a human brain grow from virtually nothing to almost everything is absolutely staggering. And it is the most beautiful thing I ever will see. It is the most beautiful thing I ever will see or ever be a part of. And to die, like, you know, when you die, there's a couple of deaths, right? You die, really, when your name is spoken and your image is thought of for the last time. Now, I don't know my great-great-great-grandfather. I mean, I know William Molyneux way back, best friends with John Locke. I know something about my grandfather. I know something about my father, of course. Now, I am one of these people, for better or for worse, I know it's for better, but sometimes it seems to be for the worst for some people. I'm leaving my brain print on the planet. I am leaving a brain print on the planet forever. I mean, the size that I'm going to be in the future is impossible to calculate. I mean, this is not humility. This is just, or a vanity. It's just a fact. Certainly not humility, I guess. But yeah, I mean, the size I'm going to be in the future is without precedent in the history of philosophy. Because nobody's done universal morality. Nobody's proven free will. Nobody's proven that we're not in a simulation beyond a shadow of a doubt. There's no UPB. And nobody has done the philosophy of parenting. Like, there's just been so much that's been new, deep, and powerful. And to have the conversations that I've had with people, you're all immortal, right? Everybody who is in a call-in show is functionally immortal. And I say this not to pump my own ego, because Lord knows only a madman gets involved in philosophy for the ego gratification, because the better you are at it, the worse the world will treat you. The more beautiful the art you create as a philosopher, the more impactful and powerful your paintings, the more the apes of culture will smear their feces on it I say this because the only way to serve philosophy is to have it cast as long a beam of light as humanly possible, which means you've got to be visible in the future, which means you've got to go as high as humanly possible, or sometimes it feels like inhumanly possible. You have to go as high as inhumanly possible in your lighthouse in order to get as far down the horizon as you can. And I'm not someone who found the truth and left the world, right? I mean, I found the truth, invented the truth, defined the truth. And I could have retreated with my family and my friends, and right, but I'm not someone who left the world, but am with the world and in the world, which is not easy at times. I don't have to put any false front up. It's not easy at times. It is the humility in serving philosophy that leaves the longest imprint on the future. The purpose of philosophy is not to make me feel smart or make me look smart or make people think how great or terrible or wonderful or bad I am. The purpose of philosophy is to serve humanity. And in the service of humanity, there's almost nothing I won't do. And in the service of philosophy, morality, truth, and virtue, well, I subjugate myself entirely to that cause. As I don't think any philosopher in history has, because at least they could have done the philosophy of parenting, at least they could have brought ethics to children, which I don't think any philosopher has ever done, and I know them quite well. And this is why I do thank you guys for being part of this journey, and this journey, I mean, we had a big bulge, right, and got too close to powerful effects. We're back at the jazz club, but in the future, it's all stadiums. In the future, it's all stadiums. And, you know, people will, oh, so vain, blah, blah, blah. It's not about vanity. It's about knowing the service you provide and having that as a standard so you can provide the best service. You don't, why would anyone want to create something and say, well, it's going to be pretty good, right? Why would anyone want to create something and say, eh, you know, it's not bad. It's okay. It's good. No, well, good, great, fantastic, the best. You know, aiming low is vanity. Aiming high is modesty. And I'll tell you why. So when you aim high, as high as you can conceive of and then higher, that's being humble. Being vain is saying, I can only do so well. You don't know that. How do you know? How do you know what you're capable of? You don't know. I didn't know when I started what I was capable of. And I refused to judge that because I'm not stupid. I refuse to judge what I was capable of because that's saying the future can be entirely based on empiricism, which it can't. Everything that is new, that is created, did not exist in the past. It is humility for me to say, I have no idea all the things I'm capable of. I have no idea. Well, I can't write a science fiction novel. I've only written really historical novels in the past. I don't know that I can't write a science fiction novel. I'm not going to prejudge that because I'm humble. I don't know what I can and can't do, so I'm going to try. And I'm going to try my absolute best and do everything I can. I don't know that I can write a novel set in the present, bringing all contemporary events in a deep and powerful philosophical and meaningful way to bear. I'd never really written a love story before, and the present is a love story. So all the people who say, oh, you can only do so much, how dare you imagine more, that's vainglorious. You are the megalomaniacs who think you know what you're capable of. You know, you have this unconscious that goes 6,000 times faster than your conscious mind. Generates dreams every night, gives you inspiration and power and depth. And you dare draw a little conscious fucking line around your unconscious and say, well, I know what you're capable of because I'm the ruler. I know. You can do this, but you can't do that. Oh, wouldn't it be so vainglorious to imagine I could do more and I could be greater and I could be better? It's like, no. You're being a megalomaniacal, vainglorious asshole to your own potential. I don't know what I'm capable of. I don't know, because I'm humble. I'll keep trying. I'll succeed. I'll fail. I don't know what I'm capable of. I don't know what the limit of my abilities is, because I'm an empiricist. And an empiricist says, well, I keep trying stuff and it keeps working out pretty well, but I'm not going to prejudge what I'm capable of, because I don't want to lie to myself and be a sophist to myself and pretend to myself that I have knowledge that I just don't. I don't have the knowledge of what my limits are. I don't, and neither do you. And putting a cap on it is out of fear, and people say that they're being humble. No. No, you're not being humble. You're just scared, and I understand that. Excellence is frightening to people. Success is frightening to people, particularly moral success. Moral success is a thumb in the eye of the vanity of others. Financial success they can live with, because maybe they can get the government to take your money and give it to them. Maybe they can chisel you for some money, but moral success, moral happiness, moral excellence, they don't like that, man, because they can't carve that up and consume it themselves. All they can do is try and sabotage your moral progress, so you end up in the squalid layer of shit that they live in. I am deeply humble as to my potential, because I will not pretend to have knowledge that I don't have, and I don't know my potential, because everything that I use to judge my potential is dwarfed by my brain as a whole. Do you see what I mean? Everything that I use to judge my potential is the tiny, tiny top part of the neofrontal cortex compared to my entire, not just brain, but body and gut. You got a second brain down there, your instincts, your gut instinct. The idea that this absolute newcomer to the entire system can judge the capabilities of the entire system. Well, I'd be like that guy who said, oh, your analogy about protecting children is just like genocidal Marxism, right? That's somebody completely new to philosophy judging an expert. He lacks humility. I'm the same way with my potential. I don't know what's down there. I don't know what's possible. I could, I don't know, maybe sit down, try and write an opera. I don't know. It's not my particular pleasure. I'm not Stuart Copeland. I'm not. It's been 4 years like trying to write some opera, the Blue, or Liverpool Oratorio, right? The Paul McCartney wrote a musical or an opera, operetta. I don't know. I don't know. I didn't know I was going to be a really good public speaker. I didn't know that I was going to be this original philosopher. I didn't know that I was going to have the capability to analyze and help people understand their own lives in such a powerful way. I didn't know. Oh, I can't do that. I can't be a public philosopher. I don't have a PhD in philosophy from an Ivy League college. I can't. I can't is the ultimate vanity. What if? That's humility. Vanity is pretending to have knowledge you don't have and taking pride in that. And this false humility of I can't, and anyone who says they can is vainglorious. It's just a way of holding everyone down, of crushing everyone down to the flatland two-dimension of bullshit low expectations. It's gross. It's repulsive. And it has people out there begged to be ruled. You know, if you achieve... And I can't achieve my potential. I cannot achieve my potential. It's like running after a train that keeps getting faster every step you take. I cannot achieve my potential. But in striving for my potential, I achieve a size and grandeur that is unrulable. People want to stay small because they want to be ruled, because they want to get something for nothing, and they lose everything. If you achieve your potential or aim at achieving your potential or pursue your potential with everything you've got, you can't be ruled. I mean, you could be bullied, you can be ordered, but you can't be ruled. And it's the size of what we're doing here that's alarming to people. All right. Teaching my son and daughter is the greatest joy. Watching them reason is amazing. Yes, it is. Or aiming low out of spite, saying these plebeians don't deserve me putting my best effort into, It's also the ego now, putting yourself above others. Same sin of pride plus wrath plus sullenness. The plebeians don't deserve me putting my best effort in. Right. So that's, let's say that there are trash people around who don't deserve your best efforts. Let's just say. So then you're letting trash determine your capacities. You're letting trash people determine the glory and grandeur of your possibilities. So you're even trashier than them. I mean, who's trashier? The trashy person or the amazing person who kneels to the trashy person? They're more trashy. Steph, I remember you mentioning that a max age difference of 10 years between a man and woman is a good rule of thumb to go by. I don't remember saying that at all. Maybe I did. Doesn't sound like something I would say, but I could be wrong. Do you still think that 10 years is a good rule of thumb, or do you think the difference can be greater and still have a loving marriage? And if a greater difference than 10 years can work, how much do you think the difference can be and still have a sincerely loving pair bond? Why are you asking this, Chris? I don't understand. Why would you be asking this? What's my definition of love? Love is our involuntary response to virtue if we're virtuous. I don't remember talking anything about time frames or age differences or anything like that. So I'm not sure why you would be asking. I mean, is this something that you're dealing with in your life? Do you have someone in your life who's a really great, virtuous, and wonderful person? But they're 11 years difference, and they love you, they love your virtues, you love them, their virtues. Why on earth would the age difference matter if you're both inspired by each other's virtues? You think that's so common that you can just wait for someone slightly closer to you in age? It's incredibly rare. It's incredibly rare when you find that person, you respect their ethics. You respect their virtues. Their courage, their honesty, their directness, their good humor. You find that person, you hold that person. You do whatever it takes to win that person's love, and you keep doing whatever it takes to keep that person's love. All right. I won't do a super long show today. I really do appreciate everyone coming by tonight. I'm happy to take another cue or two. And really do appreciate people's feedback on the Peaceful Parenting book. I gave the warning at the beginning and I wasn't kidding about it, right? You know, I understand that there are people who are like, oh, this book is so dangerous. You got to really, and they tried to do it as a marketing thing. Somebody says, I recall you mentioned 10 years as a good rule of thumb. Because the experience between man and woman would be similar. You know, if anyone's seen that or heard that, give me a quote. Maybe I said it. I don't remember. I remember when you mentioned the age thing. Your point was about cultural compatibility between large age gaps. Yes, there's a wonderful woman who is 16 years younger than me, but I'm afraid we have too much separation in life's experiences. Okay, so if a woman is 16 years younger than you, then either she's more mature and you're less mature, or she's way more mature, or you're way less mature, right? Because if you end up at the same level, despite 16 years of difference in experience, which is huge, right? Which is it? Is it that she's supernaturally mature, right? So let's say she's, what, 24 and you're 40, right? So she's 24 and you're 40. So, you know, if you are going to get together with her because you want kids and you just need somebody who's younger, okay, you know, whatever, right? But if you genuinely respect her wisdom and virtue and knowledge, and she genuinely respects your wisdom and virtue and knowledge, then either you're 16 years behind, or she's 16 years ahead, or she's 8 years ahead and you're 8 years behind, or something like that, right? So what caused her to accelerate, or what caused you to decelerate, right? See, it's the compatibility thing, and I vaguely remember this argument. So the compatibility thing is, if she's 24 and she's equal to you at 40, it means she's super fast. She's just going to blow past you, isn't she? Right? So if she's got the experience of a 40-year-old when she's 24, then she's gotten 22 years of experience in 6 years, right? From 18 to 40. She got 22 years of experience in 6 years. So she's just going to keep growing. Isn't she going to blow past you and you're going to be ridiculously immature to her later? And again, I know that there's, you know, or if you're way behind, she's still going to blow past you because something has caused you to retard your evolution as a person to the point where you're the equivalent of 24, even though you're 40, right? So she's, you know, that's the risk, is the blowing past. And so you just need to figure that out. So you've had a huge positive impact on my life. Thank you again, Steph. I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Very kind, very kind, very kind. So I would, where's the anti-simulation proof? I'd love to have something to drop on Scott Adams. So it's essentialphilosophy.com. Essentialphilosophy.com has a free book there. And one of the first argument, there's three major sections to the book: simulation theory, free will, and a shorter version of UPB. So it's there. You can get it to PDF, you can get the audiobook and so on. So essentialphilosophy.com, or you can go to freedomain.com/books and just scroll down to Essential Philosophy. All right. Any last tippy tips? Support freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. I would very, very much appreciate that. Very, very much appreciate that. Very kind. Very nice. Very nice. It makes sense? Okay. Good, good. I'm glad. I'm glad. All right. Any last cues? I'll just wait for a second here in case anybody got anything on demand. But yeah, this is like, I've done like 6 hours of shows today. Probably should be taking a bit of a break. Oh, my family happened to be out, so it was a good time to get things done. But it may be a good time to stop too. Take a break and reconnect with everybody. Rock your body. Yeah, yeah. Big chatty foreheads. All right. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. UBI coming to America? Do you know that there is a really wild thing that is the amount of money that is jammed up in the economy, that's a liability that people can't track? Is, have you tried this? Steph, thanks for tonight's show. You've done a lot for me as well. I do donate often on freedomain.com/donate. Thanks for all your hard work. Looking forward to the next show audio post. Appreciate it. Well, it certainly will be Sunday, 11 a.m. So I'm on Mother's Day, by the way. If you got a great mother, you got a mother you get along with, you got a mother who cares for you, who gives you wisdom, please, please, please do something wonderful for her. For Mother's Day, show her you love her. You know, people forget. They think, oh, I got 10 years with my parents, right? Like maybe they're, I don't know, 70 or whatever, right? And, you know, I got 10 years with my parents. And 10 years seems like a long time. But if you only see them twice a year, you've got 20 visits. 20 visits. Count by visits, not by time. I remember you saying something about people with borderline personality disorder being incapable of having good, loving relationships. Is it possible for you to elaborate on that? It's relevant for me due to my current wife candidate potentially having bipolar. You can want to get married to somebody with bipolar? I'm no psychologist, but you might want to talk to a psychologist about that. And you might want to look at videos and definitions and, you know, read about bipolar disorder. About borderline personality disorder. Yeah, borderline personality disorder, again. Sorry, not bipolar, borderline. My apologies. It is one of the most tragic diagnoses, again, to my amateur understanding, and don't take anything I'm saying as gospel. Look it up for yourself. But as far as I understand it, it really is one of the worst diagnoses for interpersonal relationships. Extremely unstable, chaotic, manipulative, hysterical, can't be loved, the I love you, I hate you, I need you, I can't stand you, I can't live without you, come here, go away stuff is just wild. So, yes, I would say be careful of that. What? Oh, yes, yeah, so somebody else, okay. So I personally, my personal opinion, if she's genuinely bipolar, there's no amount of money that I would take to marry somebody who's bipolar. And you, I mean, you really have to ask yourself, why can't you get a non-bipolar girlfriend? Right. And you really have to avoid sex with mentally unstable women, because the sex can be pretty intense, but the price you pay is even more intense. So yeah, be very, very careful with that. And definitely talk to a therapist and review the literature and review the videos that are available on bipolar. And you couldn't pay me enough to hook my wagon up to that random shooting star. But yeah, I mean, putting your dick in a bunny boiler can be pretty intense. And often you don't get much back. Girl interrupted, borderline personality disorder. Yeah, that was an interesting film, because there was no secret that was ever revealed that healed people, right? He says, well, I've got a tinge of the borderline in myself, so I'm kind of effed myself as a starting point. So I don't know. Have you dealt with your past? Have you gone to therapy? Have you confronted people who did you evil in your life, if it's safe to do so? I mean, have you taken the necessary steps to heal? Or are you just out there saying, well, I'm doomed, so I guess I'll go all in on doom? It's usually not a good approach or plan. And the other thing too, like, if you're going to have kids, you don't have that right. Like, you do not have the right to have kids with somebody who's seriously disturbed, because it's your kids who are going to pay the price, right? You don't pay the price primarily. Like, I mean, you will over time, but it's your kids who are going to pay the price most of all. Right? Because you can divorce her, but the kids are stuck, right? So if she's not going to be a good mom and you're of that age, right, then it's not a good thing to do at all, at all. All right. Thank you, everyone, so much for a great evening. Freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. Remember, donate at freedomain.com/donate for the month of May. You get the audiobook, 23 hours. You get the ebook, Peaceful Parenting. And you too can get all of that powerful stuff. Powerful stuff. Oh, and she's 19. All right. Well, caution. Caution is the word. Caution is the word. Thanks, everyone. Have a truly spectacular evening. I really appreciate your time tonight. Lots of love from up here. I'll talk to you soon.